In and Out of the Kitchen by Damien Trench. August the 13th, Thursday.
Welcome aboard today's 8:45 First Great Western train service to Plymouth. Calling at Reading, Taunton, Tiverton Parkway, Exeter St David's,
get the idea,
Newton Abbott, Totnes, and arriving in Plymouth at 12:47.
Honestly.
You really don't need to respond to every single station name that gets read out, Damien. There's five stops written here in Totnes.
Yes, thank you, Anthony. I am aware of that. I have checked the timetable.
Coffees, gents? There's yours, Damien.
At each station we get
Thank you, Mary.
They are going to remind us where we are, and then they're going to run through the remaining stops again.
Is yours, Anthony?
Yes, Anthony, I know how it works.
Which means that, thank you, Mary, including repetition, stations are going to be mentioned over the town no less than 33 times before we disembark at Totnes.
And one for me. You know, they've actually completely run out of those little milk capsules.
Thank you, Marion.
Now, if we are to assume that each station is also re-announced moments prior to our arrival there, and I think it would be right to assume that, then I think there are going to be station mentions 39 times.
I see, yes.
Anybody need a stirrer?
No, thank you.
Yes, please.
Or biscotti?
No, thank you.
Oh, yes, please.
At 8:45 in the morning. Mm.
Now, this all means that Marion and I are going to have to listen to you sighing on no fewer than 39 occasions.
Oh, dear.
What? I don't sigh. I'm not a sigher.
You are, Damien.
Tell him, Marion.
He is, Anthony.
Thank you, Marion. What?
You see?
But
The journey down to Totnes really is stunning. And one can, if one chooses to, take in some absolutely wondrous views. And it's not just landscape adorned with outstanding natural features. Oh no, one can also take the opportunity to admire stretches of Isambard Kingdom Brunel's great works, viaducts and the like. I love travelling by train, always have done, although I do find that the excessive quantity of tannoy announcements that one must now endure to be a little vexing. I wouldn't be altogether surprised if they were found to cause brain lesions. The Literary Festival, however, represents a wonderful opportunity for Anthony, Marion and I to spend some time together, all expenses paid, I'm ashamed to say, and fit in a little light book promotion work along the way.
I've been looking forward to this for ages.
Me too. Although I'll be a little happier once my talk's out of the way. I'm a little nervous about it.
Well, don't be.
Yes, don't be.
Easy for you to say, Anthony. You don't have to do anything. You could just wander about the place slowly getting sozzled and sampling little cheese.
Yeah, great, isn't it?
Some of us have to work.
Oh, Damien, it's not much work. You'll only be on stage for an hour. I'll interview you for 40 minutes and then we can take questions from the floor.
I suppose.
How many people will there be?
Oh, hundreds.
Really?
Possibly.
Well, let's see what it says in the information pack, which they have so thoughtfully provided and you have so studiously ignored. Damien Trench in conversation with Marion Duffett on the subject of poets and their palettes at 3:30 p.m. in the boot tent. Capacity 174.
Well, then.
So tens of people.
That's what I meant.
That's a good number. It'll be intimate.
Exactly. I mean, you don't want to be in one of those big rooms, do you?
Oh, yes, I'm in the main house.
Exactly. You'd get lost. What does that hold?
Seats 900.
Exactly. 900?
Yeah.
900 people?
Yes, I assume the seats are for people.
Yeah. Oh, dear me, who else is on?
About all sorts. Looks like a broad church.
Oh, good.
There's what looks like some sort of sports personality. I didn't say what sport, but he's wearing a T-shirt in the photograph, so I suppose he is. I imagine we're supposed to know, aren't we? He's going to be discussing his autobiography with...
With difficulty, I imagine.
Well, with Sky Sports, Duncan, someone or other.
Oh, I bet that'll be marvellous.
Ridiculous. A literary festival.
Who else? Oh, Gary McDade's on. Well, I might go and see that.
Who on earth is Gary McDade?
Oh, come on, Damien. You must have heard of him.
Well, I might recognise him.
No, Damien, you won't know his face anyway.
I might?
No, you won't, because he's ex-SAS. He's not allowed to be photographed.
He writes novels now.
Oh, that guy. Is he still going?
Mm-hmm.
What happens when he appears in public? Does he have to wear a balaclava?
Or a gimp mask?
Really, Marion, must you sexualise every conversation?
If possible.
Well, I imagine he can have his face uncovered now, you know.
Right.
But if you try and take a photograph, you'll probably get shot.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Oh, look, there's Iron Bridge.
Where?
Just on the... No, it's gone.
Oh.
It might not have been, actually. It should be a bridge.
Travelling by train rather put me in mind of banana bread. Perfect for a lift on those long journeys when you're 2 hours in with three to go. This is an easy recipe, the results of which I guarantee. Be sure to use overripe bananas and the right size tin. 8 inches by 5. You will need 4 ounces of salted butter and a little more besides for greasing, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, you know the sort, 10 ounces of flour, plain, A teaspoon of bicarb, as we used to call it in home ec. 8 ounces of caster sugar, 2 eggs, free range. 4 bananas, overripe and mashed. Round about 1/6 of a pint of milk, mixed with 1.5 teaspoons of lemon juice or vinegar. 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract. Into a large mixing bowl, sift the flour, the bicarbonate and the salt. In a separate bowl, cream the butter and sugar together until they appear, and indeed are, light and fluffy. Then add your eggs, your mashed bananas, your lemonated milk and vanilla extract to the butter and sugar mixture and mix well. Fold in the flour mixture and then pour the whole lot into your greased loaf tin. Then bake it at gas 4 for about an hour until it's well risen and golden brown. Please let it cool in the tin for a few minutes before you turn it out onto a wire rack to cool completely before serving. Literary festivals really can be the most terrific fun, and it really is fascinating the sort of people one can end up meeting. If you had ever told my 15-year-old self, for instance, that one day Salman Rushdie and I would travel by speedboat together across Derwent Water, I'd have been quite flabbergasted. Likewise, the afternoon I enjoyed playing petanque in Cheltenham with Terry Waite. A hoot, even if he is a bit of a hustler. But there is another side to these symposiums, which is that they can sometimes be rather cutthroat. The literary world may have a reputation for being perhaps more classy or sophisticated than some of the other branches of this mighty tree we call the arts world, but authors, and with a heavy heart I'm afraid I must include myself in the sweeping generalisation that is to follow, can be an astonishingly ambitious bunch when the mood takes them. All year round they sit at their desks in their studies or their libraries or their garrets or their sheds or on their landings, and they just write, write, write. They spend long hours alone, punctuated by the occasional meal with an agent or loved one. And then summer comes along, and suddenly they find themselves being thrown together with a muster of fellow authors, and the bubble of self-sufficiency bursts, and it becomes impossible not to compare yourself with others.
Oh, marvellous. It's another world.
Oh, how nice to smell some fresh air.
Now, where do you suppose that we... there's someone with a sign.
Yes, they're here to collect Damien Trunch. very nice.
Hello there. We're the Damien Trunch party.
And which of you is Damien?
It's him. He's Damien Trunch.
Damien Trench, hello.
Oh, I didn't know there'd be 3 of you. No one said you were bringing an entourage.
Well, it's hardly an entourage.
Gary McDay turned up all on his own. No security at all.
Well, no visible security. Anyway.
Well, he can probably look after himself. I'm Marion, by the way, Marion Duffett. I'll be chairing the Damien Trunch talk.
Thank you, Marion.
I'm Anthony. I'm Damien Trunch's partner.
Oh, wonderful. I'm Jane. I'm one of the volunteers. Well, the wife of a volunteer, but I do tend to get dragged into these things. He's off sailing, of course. This is my car. If I'd known there were going to be 3 of you, I'd have brought the estate.
Oh, I see.
Well, you better go in the front.
Wonderful.
Because of those legs.
Yep, thank you.
And you two will have to snuggle up in the back.
I'm sure that'll be fine.
I hope you don't mind dogs.
There are dogs in there?
No, but their blankets on the seat.
Oh, well, perhaps we could move...
And if we could just get the teeniest shift on, that'd be great. I've got to collect Leslie Garrett off the next train. Single, apparently.
Well, I hope she likes dogs.
Oh, goodness.
Everyone in? Got enough room?
Oh, yes, yeah,
well,
fine.
I can move this forward if you like.
That's bad.
Sorry,
that's bad.
Are you all right?
Yeah, fine.
Poor Damien Trunch.
Our lift in the car might not have been the finest of finales to our otherwise delightful journey, but the hotel where, thankfully, all 3 of us have been billeted is a total joy. I say hotel. The Rose and Crown is actually an old coach house. The internal angles might be a touch screwy, but it's perfectly spacious. And few things in life make me tingle quite so much as the sight of exposed beams. Marion is similarly charmed. Anthony, of course, always a victim of his own height, thinks the place is an absolute death trap. The stairwells are too narrow and windy, he says, because in the short journey to our room, he nearly hit his head twice. We unpack, freshen up, and then nip downstairs again for a lunch, which a flyer in our rooms informs us is complimentary. No sooner have we regrouped in the lobby than we were buttonholed.
Marion! Don't you look tremendous?
You're looking very well yourself, Bill.
Oh! I've given up dairy.
That must be it.
Yes. What are you doing here? Have you come to see something at the festival?
I'm taking part, Bill.
No.
I'm interviewing my great friend Damien Trunch.
Hello there.
Oh, hello. Damien Trunch. My name's Bill. Bill Trumpets. You're a chef, aren't you?
Well, a cookery writer.
Well, I'm the arts correspondent, yes, that's right, yes. A very close friend of Marion's.
Bill and I used to work together.
Yes, work together, a long time ago.
Well, it wasn't that. Anyway, you're doing a piece about the festival?
Yes, that's right, yes, and I'm also interviewing this shady gentleman.
Hi there.
Hello.
This is Gary McDade.
Oh, hi there. I'm Anthony. I'm Damien's partner.
Hello.
I loved Operation Phoenix.
Oh, thanks.
It's a great idea for a story.
Well, it was true, of course. I mean, it all happened.
Oh, I see. So right, that one wasn't a novel.
No.
Well done, Anthony. So, you two are doing something together?
Yes, that's right. Yes, we're in the main house at 6. You should come!
I'd love to.
I'm afraid that clashes with when we're on. Oh.
No, it doesn't, Damien. No, we'll be done by 4:30.
That's... Sorry, I must have got it mixed up with I think we should probably be getting our lunch. Really nice to meet you.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Nice to see you again.
Yeah, well, perhaps we'll see more of each other over the week.
Well, perhaps.
Perhaps I'll come to your little chat.
Lovely.
Yeah. Nice to see you, Bill, and, of course, nice to see you too. Nice to meet you, in fact, Greg.
Gary.
Gary, big fan. Big fan.
Lunch.
I am, in all honesty, thrilled to have been given the 3:30 slot in the boot tent. Another cookery writer was in the same venue at 9:15 this very morning, and I have to say, I don't envy him. Not that there's much competition between cookery writers, really. We're a big, happy family. My concerns, though, are about proper writing. That's what I feel literary festivals should promote, and not books which are essentially merchandising. Yes, my book is a tie-in with the television series, but it's been painstakingly, lovingly written and contains swathes of fresh material. It stands alone, and I feel humbly that it deserves to be talked about. Not like silly books by comedians or DJs about nothing. This festival has a very decent roster, but I have to say that the presence of Gary McDade gnaws away at me. I'm sure he's a decent fellow, and it sounds as if once upon a time he did some rather brave things in a desert, but to call it literature... And as for him being interviewed by someone as high-profile as Bill Trumpets, who really should know better but is perhaps too fascinated by celebrity to give quality any consideration, in such a big venue, 900 people, and in such a decent time slot, immediately prior to dinner, well, I'm afraid it attaches to his work a degree of validity that I'm not at all certain that it merits. Anyway, I'm ranting, I'm sorry. Please accept this recipe for a summer salad by way of an apology. And don't be afraid to spend proper money on oranges. Recipe. Duck, orange and couscous salad. You will need 2 large handfuls of couscous, the juice of 1 lemon, the juice of 2 oranges, another orange left whole, a couple of glugs of fruity olive oil, salt and freshly ground black pepper, of course, a handful of duck meat from a leftover organic roast duck, a handful of fresh basil leaves, more if you fancy, I mean that, a handful of pea shoots. In a bowl, pour boiling water over your couscous, completely covering it, and then leave for about 1/4 hour until the water has been absorbed. Elsewhere, whisk together the lemon and orange juice with the olive oil and season well with the salt and pepper. Seriously, do please add more olive oil if you would like. Pour this dressing over the cooked couscous and let it soak up the dressing for a further 10 minutes. Meanwhile, peel the remaining orange by your preferred method and relieve it of its pith before cutting it into good-sized chunks. Add these, along with the duck and the herbs, to the couscous and mix gently. A lightness of touch is the key here. Then serve with the pea shoots under. We sped through a very decent lunch. I opted for the fresh-dressed crab, super, and were then given a lift to the festival site in the grounds of a stately home which may or may not have once been the holiday hideaway of Dorothy Parker. It used to be the case that the authors performing or speaking at the festival would stay in the house itself, which would have been nice, but the festival has now grown to such a size that this is no longer possible. The same lady who picked us up, name beginning with J, drove us to the site in the same car, and so I insisted on taking the front passenger seat. I can't be facing a paying audience in trousers covered in dog hair. Marion, I'm afraid, had to do just that. The event itself was thrilling. Every seat was taken, and any nerves that I'd felt prior to our discussion evaporated as soon as I took to the stage. Anthony was a great counsellor beforehand, and Marion made for a terrific foil during. We acquitted ourselves, I think anyway, well. The audience enjoyed what we had to say about poets and their prandial proclivities and asked largely intelligent questions. I even got the chance to reveal mine and Marion's proposed next topic to tackle, a tome and accompanying TV series on important historical dinners, King Alfred's cakes, the diet of worms, the Last Supper, etc., and the whole thing went off very nicely indeed. We headed into the backstage area in good spirits. Oh, well, that seemed to go,
Damien, you were absolutely fantastic. Oh, you were brilliant. Well done.
Oh, thank you, Marion. Well, I mean, what delightful questions you asked.
Congratulations, you two. I loved it.
Well, were you out there?
No, I was back here, mainly. But, no, I could hear. I mean, I heard quite a lot of it. Cheers. Cheers.
Oh, cheers.
Ooh. Well, I'm in a mood to celebrate, I think.
Oh, yes, me too.
Yeah, it's only 4:30, but you are officially demobbed.
Well,
Why don't I go and refill these?
Yes, they do seem to have gone out rather fast.
Why not?
Mr. Trench.
Yes?
I'm Evie. I work for the festival, one of the organisers.
Oh, how do you do?
I must say, that was terrific.
Oh, were you out there?
No.
Oh.
But I was standing by the exit as people were leaving, and they were making some very happy noises.
Oh, I see.
And wasn't it packed?
Well, I'm...
Not an empty seat. We could have sold double that. Heaps of people were asking. We should put you in the main house next year.
Oh, well, that's very, 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 very...
Here you are.
Thanks.
Hello.
Oh, thank you. I'm Anthony, by the way.
Hello.
Thank you.
Goodness, you all seem to be enjoying yourselves.
Well, the more we drink of this, the sooner it'll begin to taste nice.
I often find, if I'm very nervous prior to an event, that my nerves can disappear during, but then mysteriously reappear after. The copious amounts of free wine on offer did a lot to ease those nerves, and the three of us went about the business of having fun pretty seriously. Which puts me in mind of a rather jolly recipe that you could knock up either sober or drunk. It's that easy. Deviled kidneys. You will need 6 lamb's kidneys, halved and rinsed thoroughly, 2 small shallots, chopped finely, a teaspoon of Dijon mustard, some Worcestershire sauce, a pinch of whatever spice you have in the cupboard. Cumin or paprika can work, but I prefer cayenne. Cloves are, it goes almost without saying, a no-no. 40 millilitres of double cream, a small glass of sherry, a teaspoon of that pate paperi, more gentleman's relish you undoubtedly have in the fridge door, and a teaspoon of quince jelly. Fry the shallots in a pan, then add the kidneys, making sure you cut out the white tendon thing in the middle, or they'll curl up. When that's all colouring nicely, add the Dijon, the Worcestershire sauce, the anchovy paste and the cayenne. Leave for a minute, then stir in the cream, sherry and the quince jelly, letting the sauce bubble briefly. Season properly, snip on some chives, then scatter it onto whatever you like. A plate, perhaps. Or toast would do, too. At about 5:45, Anthony excused himself because, bizarrely, he wanted to go and try to sneak into the back of the Gary McDade event. He had not been gone long when the girl from the festival reappeared in, it has to be said, a bit of a flap.
We've got a bit of a crisis on our hands.
Oh?
It's Gary McDade.
Has he killed someone?
No, rather the reverse, actually. He's knocked himself unconscious on a beam at the hotel. Bill Trumpet's just rang to find out where he'd got to, and the receptionist found him out cold on the main stairs.
Oh, dear, I'm afraid I'm not really much of a first aid expert.
Has somebody put him in a position?
A doctor's been called, but we wondered, as he's currently non-compos mentis and looking to be so for the foreseeable, if you could perhaps fill in his time slot?
Me?
Damien?
There are 900 people sitting in the big tent waiting to be entertained. We just can't cancel it.
Well, I'm flattered you think that I'm...
Trumpets is going berserk. He's desperate to interview absolutely anyone.
I see, but I'm not sure I'm the right...
Oh, go on, Damien. Go on, it'd be good for book sales.
Well, that's all very well and good, man, but...
I mean, if you can't, Toby Young's put himself...
Oh, right, OK, yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, have another glass of this.
Are you sure that's
Oh, that's a good idea. Oh, God. Oh, actually, I'm going to need something to eat first.
OK, but make it quick.
I just had time to grab a handful of oatcakes, and off we sped to the backstage area of the main house, where a furious Bill Trumpets was chewing the furniture.
Look, have you got someone?
Damien's doing it.
What?
Damien Trench, or is it Trunch? There's some debate.
It is Trench.
Ah, I'll leave you two to it, then. I've got to run this foot spa over to Leslie Garrett. Good luck.
Oh, you. Right, well, hi. Thanks for doing this. It'll be great, I'm sure. Just sit there, and I will ask the questions.
Right.
Aho, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, I suppose. Now, first off, bit of bad news. Very sorry. I'm afraid Gary McDade has had a little contretemps.
Who's Damien Trench or Trunch?
It's me. I am, hello.
Right, I'm on sound. Can I pop a lapel mic on you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, you're quick.
Yeah, that's because I'm hurrying. Where's Trumpets?
Oh, he's already out there.
What? He's not wearing a mic. No one will be able to hear a bloody word. Oh, that bloke really is as clueless as everybody says he is. Right, when you go out there, you give him this handheld, all right?
OK.
I'll go and switch it all on at the desk, honestly. What a So, with that in mind, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome on stage Darian Trunch.
I just had time to shove the last couple of oatcakes in my mouth, and out I went to give Bill Trumpets his microphone and to do my best.
Now you should at least be able to hear me, so, well, thanks for joining us. I'm sorry?
It's all right. I've just eaten some, okay.
Well, I'll just give you some time to, swallow that little one down, then. Why isn't there any... Oh, Christ, I'm sorry, could someone bring us a glass of water? Actually, a couple of glasses of water. My guest seems to be struggling a little bit with, sorry, what was it?
Couple of oat cakes.
A couple of oat cakes. All done?
Sorry, sometimes the really finely milled ones actually stick to your mouth more.
I see. So tell me a little... So tell me a little bit about what you've been up to lately.
Well, I've been making a television series about the eating habits of poets.
Ah. Right, I see. So, how did it go?
Well, it's been an absolute treat to do, Bill. A treat, rather a departure from my normal work. I'm sure you'll all agree, but it has been, it's been terribly good fun. Thomas Chatterton, for instance, used to airdrize... is there any sign of that water yet?
Bill Trumpets' interviewing technique was not particularly penetrating. I appreciate that he'd been expecting to interview someone else, but he really seemed to have very little idea about who I am or what I do, especially for someone who claimed to recognise me. The audience didn't know who I was either. Due to his lack of microphone, no one had heard when Trumpets explained to the audience that Gary McDade had been injured, and due to the lack of photographs that exist of Gary McDade, no one knows what he looks like. Thus, a large number of people in the tent were under the impression not that I was McDade's replacement, but that I actually was the man himself. My, to me at least, startling revelation that Tennyson was allergic to fish went for nothing, and Trumpets asked if people had questions after we'd only been going about 7 minutes. Two of them were about the methods of private security companies operating in the Gulf, which I think I handled well in the circumstances. Another was about how to kill a man with one punch, which I had a bit of a go at, but did come a little unstuck. The faulty impression that I was McDade was further enforced when Trumpets forced me to read out an extract from the opening chapter of McDade's new novel. I've always considered myself to be rather a good sight reader of text, but this posed a serious challenge. I had consumed, it is true, an awful lot of wine in the period between 4:30 and just before 6, and I had also left my reading glasses backstage at my own venue, but I opened the book and began to read anyway. Mr. McDade's prose really is quite vivid.
Burning Blood by Gary McDade, Chapter 1. Corporal Ryan James... Corporal Ryan James brushed the sweat away from his eyes with the back of his aching hand and took the chance to inspect the wound on his thigh. Of the hail of bullets he had faced, a mere two had made contact. One had grazed the flesh and another had passed through it, taking, James could feel, a little bone with it. Oh. James could tell from the shape of the hole and the smell of the wound... Oh. That the bullets had been M193s. Or should that be 193s? I'm not a bullet... Anyway, centerfire cartridges with a lead alloy core. British made, thought Ryan to himself, chuckling dryly. The bandages that he had hastily improvised immediately after the firefight were now completely saturated with blood. Mostly his own. What? How could he still be... Anyway... He ripped another shred from his shirt and applied a fresh tourniquet. There was no way he was done yet. Ryan James was not the sort of guy who was going to take being held in captivity in a South American prison while the British government refused to officially acknowledge his existence lying down. That sentence is a bit of a journey, isn't it? And he was getting a little tired of having to kill people with his bare hands. He'd already done away with 3 men that morning, and the next time he got double-crossed by a member of the junta's leftist militia... He wasn't going to think twice about using some kind of weapon. No, there should be some kind of weapon. Yes, that's better. Suddenly he heard footsteps from below the vent. Someone must be walking near towards or away from me, he reasoned. You'd think, wouldn't you? He crouched a little lower and peered between the slats of the grill to get a sight of his potential target, silently removing a strand of steel wire from the edge of the vent's casing as he did so. As his prey passed beneath him, he noiselessly slid the vent to one side, if you say so, and dropped down onto the guard below. One kick to the head, delivered while still in mid-air, naturally, was enough to stun his enemy. It gave James ample time to get the strand of steel cable around his neck. Ooh. He moved it from side to side in a well-practiced soaring motion. Ooh. All the time, the wire getting deeper and deeper into the flesh... Until he caught the unmistakable scent of a stranger's warm blood in his nostrils, and he could feel his prey twitch. Oh, excuse me. I mean, it's tremendous writing, but I'm afraid I'm going to be...
I think I managed to get behind the curtain before I was sick. Antony, who had been watching, horrified and delighted in equal measure, sprinted from the back of the audience and across the stage and came to my aid. He was shouting, "Nobody touch him, he's my boyfriend," which caused some surprise from certain quarters of the audience, apparently. He helped me to the backstage area, where I immediately blacked out in the lap of Marion, who had herself fallen asleep there. Trumpets, meanwhile, saved the day by banging out a couple of his showbiz anecdotes and taking questions on anything you like from the floor. A horrible bit of posturing, if you ask me, but as I came round, I could hear him actually being congratulated.
Oh, Bill, that was tremendous. You are a hero.
I did what I did. I do what I do.
It's you who should be in the SAS, probably.
Yes,
save the day, I say.
Oh, hello, Marion. How are you?
I'll be fine if I eat something.
It was great. They loved your, what was it, stories?
Oh, it was okay, I guess.
Loved them.
They did seem...
Yes, yes, particularly the one about you and Russell Crowe.
Oh, Russell, yes, dead cert. Is your friend all right, Marion? Yeah.
He's fine. He's
The cooking guy. Is he a poet, is he? I mean, he does seem a bit phased. Is it nerves?
He drinks, apparently.
Oh, how sad.
We should have you back again next year.
Well, I'd love that.
A definitely mainstay.
I would be delighted.
And might even be able to put you up in the stately home.
Oh, fabulous.
Are you planning any books of your own?
Well, it's funny you should say that, actually. I am, in fact, planning something about important historical dinners.
Oh, that would be perfect.
I think it'd be all right.
In and out of the kitchen starred Miles Chupp and Justin Edwards, with Ben Crowe, Toby Longworth, Sarah Tom and Leslie Vicarage. It was written by Miles Chupp. The producer was Sam Michelle.